Welcome to the Qalam Institute podcast. This is Umar Osman. I'm your guest host for today, and I'm talking with Sheikh Abdul Nasser Jangda about the Khatib and Public Speaking Workshop project. We get into the history of the workshop, why it's important to us, what people can get out of it, and a couple of other topics. Before we dive in, first, we appreciate your support of the Qalam podcast, which is a large audio library of a number of Islamic classes taught by the Shuyukh at Qalam Institute. You can do that by going to supportqalam.com. And then secondly, you can check out the show notes for relevant links about how to request this particular workshop in your local community. And with that, we'll dive in.
Inna alhamdulillah, nahmaduhu wa nas. I just thought it'd be funny to start a podcast about khutbas that way. This is Abdul Nasser Jangda. I'm here with Umar Osman, and we are here particularly today to talk about khutbas and also more specifically the Khatib workshop, because khutbas itself is such a huge topic of discussion that warrants like so much conversation. But then specifically, I think the Khatib workshop from about 10, 11 years ago when we kind of first did it then, I mean, and not taking any credit for we're the first one. No, we were not definitely the first ones to do it. But just from that point on forward, it seems like just the idea of doing some kind of a Khatib workshop has really, really caught on and come to kind of the forefront of the consciousness of the community and it being a need. So Umar and I thought it'd be kind of cool to sit back and kind of think back and reflect on the whole experience of it and what kind of motivates it.
So maybe let's take it back to how we started.
Yeah.
So I remember I was in college.
Mid-2000s. Early 2000s?
Early 2000s.
Early 2000s.
I think it may have been 2000.
We just got dated. 2000, everybody. Turn of the millennial. Y2K, yeah. Baby. That's
2000, 2001.
Somewhere. 2000, the world was going to end?
Yeah,
basically. All right. And then all jokes aside, very seriously, 9/11 did happen. And I know that a lot of times folks listening to stuff probably get tired of 9/11 being brought up, except I'm not, you know, Hillary Clinton running for president. So I'm not bringing it up as a cheap ploy. 9/11 just ended up becoming a huge factor in terms of khutbah because all of a sudden we were under a magnifying glass.
Yeah, every single speech was under scrutiny.
Everything. I mean, there were people, you know, just non-Muslims attending random Jummah khutbahs at random suburban masajid. I mean, before back in the day, remember, you used to have to be like some kind of big cultural center in downtown, or you had to be the masjid that was off campus to kind of get some non-Muslim visitors.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, I mean, Colleyville Masjid, middle of a sleepy residential neighborhood, and then you turn around, there's like 15 non-Muslims observing Jummah in the back.
Yeah, and people have tape recorders out, which was not super common. But I remember specifically coming to you, I think, around that time.
Yeah.
Because I had done debate and a number of other public speaking things throughout high school. And at college, when I first started attending Jummah regularly.
Yeah.
Because obviously school time, I couldn't come. So Fridays I had no class and I would come to the masjid every Friday. And I started to realize like, okay, I don't know anything about Islam like these people do, but they don't know how to put two sentences together. And yeah. I got really frustrated.
Yeah.
And I started trying to figure out like, well, is this something maybe I should do?
Yeah.
And I think I had come to you, I went to another imam and they're kind of like, yeah, jump in because we need help.
And that kind of coincided with the moment that I was having as the basically the imam of the community. I mean, I wasn't full time because it was kind of a more sleepy suburban kind of masjid. It was busy on Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. So I'd be there for Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays. But I was having kind of a moment as this basically part-time imam where I think I went 6 months straight giving every single Friday khutbah.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, because I just couldn't find another khatib. I trust me, I do not like the sound of my voice that much. I went 6 months straight because I literally could not find another khatib. And so I was kind of like, what do I do? Because every other imam that I called, and there was only like, you know, like four in like a 40-mile radius, you know, obviously they're busy as well. So I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? So I was kind of like trapped in this moment. And you came to me around that time to have this conversation. And it got me kind of thinking. And I remember we both started kind of thinking. And that led to kind of us having a discussion, conversation. Okay, Islamically, what's needed in order to fulfill the requirements of a khutbah. So we have right. that conversation. You kind of bring forth this framework that, okay, if you got somebody who's got good Islamic knowledge, but needs to kind of know how to structure an argument from, you know, starting point to end point and present some kind of a compelling argument, then this is how you do it in terms of speech or rhetoric and debate and whatnot. So I said, okay, that was very useful because I knew a couple of brothers. You probably remember them as well. One of them, Muhammad, you know, Muhammad Rizad. And then he was, mashallah, a very knowledgeable brother.
He was probably the best khatib in the area for a while.
For a while. So he was a really knowledgeable guy, very dedicated guy, very friendly guy, big old smile, knew how to like mix and mingle with people and all that kind of stuff. But again, he wasn't like a formally trained speaker.
Right.
So he was very nervous about that whole kind of idea of like, all right, how do I do this? So when we kind of put together this little framework of here's the Islamic component, here's kind of a speech component for somebody who doesn't come naturally for, then this is how you can actually train somebody up. So I remember all of a sudden I went from overnight from being like, you know, like starving, couldn't find another khatib to having a kind of like they call it like a ridiculousness of riches.
Yeah.
You know, it, all of a sudden I started scheduling you for khutbah. I could schedule Brother Muhammad for khutbah. And then one thing led to another. And we just kind of started multiplying the khatibs from there. And then I remember encouraging other young brothers in the community who would take seminars and classes and read with some imams and this and that, where I was like, all right, let's get you trained up and plugged into the rotation.
I think one thing we should point out. So when you're talking about how you might call like your four imam buddies, no one can fill in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's still like 35 other places that have a khutbah going on.
Yeah.
And the people filling in, I mean, everyone can kind of fill in the blanks. It was not very good. And
it was
That was branding the entire Jummah experience as a whole for the community as just this terrible thing that we just have to do.
And I think now we kind of call out a bad khutbah for a bad khutbah, but because there was never, now at least everyone's kind of aware of
what a good khutbah sounds like versus a bad
there
one.
Is an alternative to this reality.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, my reality is bad khutbahs, but there is an alternate reality. I just have to find my way to it.
Yeah.
Right? But back then, there was no alternate reality. There was only one reality, and that was this bad khutbah. And that's why...
That's just the way it was.
The standard mentality in the 90s and early 2000s was, I go to khutbah, I kind of tuck my chin into my chest, and I get a solid 20-minute nap.
Yeah.
That was a mentality. I can tell you, growing up, that was a mentality. I go to Jummah, I just kind of tuck that chin into the into the chest right there. I had the move perfected.
Well, I can tell you what... And that's maybe not the best thing to admit that I've done. And I know other people have done too. Is like, even though we might know, yes, there's a certain reward for getting to Jummah early and listening to the whole khutbah and whatnot. But because we knew the experience was going to be that painful, a lot of people would just on purpose show up 5 minutes before the iqamah time and come and literally take care of the obligation and go home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now, jumping forward, basically, there was almost like this like little kind of mini movement happening here in our area where it was like our masjid, all of a sudden, I went from having to give all four khutbahs for 6 months straight, 24, 25 khutbahs in a row, to all of a sudden, the next 6 months, I'm only giving khutbah once a month.
Yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, when... You know, West Creek and Blue Mound and UTD and all these places were calling me, who had always been calling me. I was like, I can actually come give khutbah, you know? And so they were like, okay, that's awesome. So I'd go there. And then they kind of became curious. They're like, how could you come here? Who's giving khutbah at Colleyville?
Yeah.
And I said, alhamdulillah, we got a whole khatib rotation.
Well, let me ask you this. So after giving, let's say, 6 months straight worth of khutbahs, what were your impressions when you finally sat through ones given by other people?
So it depends. Like the ones that were being given at our masjid.
Yeah.
By the folks that I had.
But for people that you picked is a different. Yeah.
Okay. When I went back to having to listen to what your typical khutbah was back then, I was just like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
No. I can't do this. Like now, because alhamdulillah, with efforts like the seminary and all the students and teachers and instructors that we have, I actually end up attending khutbahs and listening to khutbahs quite often, quite frequently. So now, when I listen to a khutbah, it's actually a very enjoyable experience. I like really, really enjoy it. It's awesome. Last Friday or the Friday before, one of our instructors, Aqalam, at the seminary, Sheikh Muntasir, he had khutbah at the center masjid. And I wasn't scheduled for khutbah, so I just showed up and heard his khutbah. And I was just like, man, life is good, yeah. You know? But back then, it wasn't like that. Back then wasn't like that. When I went from 6 months straight of just giving khutbah to then having to listen to one of the unfortunate kind of khutbahs going on in the community, I was like, man, this is a bad situation.
So,
but what I was going to say was, when I started to like, after 8 months of like, you know, some other musalla or MSA calling me, I was able to finally go there. They were curious. How were you able to come? I thought you said that there's no one available at Khalilville to give khutbah, so you can't go nowhere. I said, we got a khatib rotation now. And they were like, really? Can we get those khatibs for the other weeks? So then there became like four locations, including our masjid and the three other places I was connected to that had like a solid location, solid rotation. And then that led to more places being more and more curious. And that's how it kind of became a thing.
So getting into that of people stepping in and filling the role, I remember one challenge that we had early was this idea of, well, the khatib has to be like a scholar. They have to have a certain mm-hmm. level of Islamic knowledge. And I don't know if I have those qualifications. And the second thing is kind of that, I don't know if it's humility or false modesty, maybe it's a little bit of A, a little bit of B, but the idea of I shouldn't throw myself forward to take that position because mm-hmm. that's not the character that a Muslim is supposed to have of like, hey, khutbah, hand up, let me do it.
And I think there is some validity to that. There is some validity to that. And I think that being the foundation of one's mindset is a good and a healthy thing. I don't want to necessarily, I never want to deliberately like, look, I don't look forward to volunteering myself. I don't look forward to volunteering myself. I don't hope that I can kind of volunteer myself. While that a good foundation to have, there are other things that are built on top of that foundation. See, that can be the foundation. That can be your humility, your sincerity, your integrity, your honesty. But then there are things that need to be built on top of that foundation. What needs to be built on top of that foundation is also a sense of obligation, responsibility, and community. And then understanding the fact that, fine. And see, this is where people get it wrong. When people are kind of like, oh, so what? You're advocating that people volunteer themselves to give the khutbah? How dare you, brother? Haven't you ever heard of ikhlas? And I'm like, well, calm down there, relax. Yeah. I'm not telling people to volunteer themselves to give the khutbah at the Grand Mosque of Damascus or, you know, Masjid Nabawi or, you know, the Valley Ranch Islamic Center or, you know, I'm not telling them to do that.
Yeah.
Like at the biggest masjid in town. I'm not telling them to do that. I'm talking about the little tiny musalla with 30 people praying Jumu'ah.
That can't find anyone.
That literally have no one to give khatib. They don't have no one to give khutbah. Where on Friday, one uncle gets up, prints out a piece of paper from the internet, reads that piece of paper, and then says, Akimis Salat. And then he just leads prayer.
Yeah.
In Bat Tazweed. All right.
So well, I know one uncle that had 30 different papers printed out that he cycled through. And I think I heard all of them at least twice. And you know who I'm talking about.
I do. I'm talking about that's that sense of responsibility and community. I'm talking about the MSA.
Yeah.
That literally like there's no one to give khutbah. And like these, you know, all these students are sitting there. Everyone's looking over at each other and they're kind of like, what do we do?
Yeah. I've had a couple of brothers reach out to me for like, you know, I don't know if I want to give khutbah, this and that. And like, remember one guy, in a span of 3 months, he would text me every Friday, like, you won't believe what I just sat through.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's gotten to the point that I think it's like literally obligatory on you to go volunteer yourself because you can't do worse than this guy.
Yeah. And see, that's exactly what I'm saying is that, and my teachers actually gave me that advice. My Sheikh Mufti Naeem Sahib, he gave me that advice. Even though I was, you know, I was student of knowledge, no big deal, but I had still put in my time to study. I'd spent 10 years overseas. I was coming back and he's like, when you go back, you're going to give khutbah in the community. You, for now, until I let you know, do not give khutbah at any of the big masajid. And he had visited, you know, our town and our city, so he was kind of familiar back then. You know, it was like Center Masjid in Arlington, INT Richardson. Yeah. He's like, don't give khutbah at Richardson, don't give khutbah at Center Arlington. He said, give khutbah at the MSAs. Give khutbah at the really, really tiny musallas. Blue Mound. I don't know if you remember that.
So, I do actually. Out on the Fort Worth side, right?
Yeah. So before there was the Wataga Masjid,
yeah.
They used to get together and pray Jummah at a motel. At a clubhouse of a motel called Blue Mound. The area was called Blue Mound. I used to go give khutbah there. It was like 30, 40 like people who worked in the area and the different factories in the area, Muslim brothers, they would get together and I would just go give khutbah over there.
I used to go to the industrial warehouse in Alliance.
Oh yeah, Alliance.
35W. Like, I mean, this is literally middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So then that, see, that's a place where you step up because trust me, there ain't no glory.
No.
There ain't no glory. That's just work. That's just work. That's just putting in hard work to serve the deen.
So it's funny, I actually remember having a conversation with one guy who said, I had heard him give khutbah a couple of times, and then he stopped. I'm like, why don't you give khutbah anymore? And he's like, oh, this is, you know, I feel like a hypocrite that I'm such a bad person, and, you know, I get on the minbar and tell people to do things, and I just don't think it's appropriate anymore. And, you know, he had that whole speech of he feels hypocritical, so he stopped giving it. And I'm listening, he's going on for like 5-6 minutes on making this point, and then he goes at the end, he goes, well, there's one topic I would give khutbah about that I feel fully sincere on, and that's my love for the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And I was like, I think you've got all this twisted. You seem to go start talking. Yeah. Just go start speaking.
No, and I remember having a conversation with quite a few brothers and students, and I actually ended up doing like a lot of research and pulling all the quotes of the Salaf in regards to this particular issue of what if you're serving the deen or you're doing something and it specifically mentioned like things like giving khutbah or teaching durus or leading salah or something like that, and you have kind of this doubt about your sincerity and this and that. And literally, I could not find a single statement from any of the Salaf that said, quit doing the good that you're doing. It basically said, okay, if you're doing good and then you feel like you're not living up to it, then shut up and start living up to it.
So keep the action going and then work on your intention while
you're
doing it.
It basically just literally said, just man up, grow up.
Big boy pants.
Yeah, and live up to it. Stop being a crybaby. Live up to it. You know, meet the challenge. Stop crying about it. Meet the challenge. The only time they said that you ever kind of do recluse yourself is if you really actually start to have like a crisis of faith. You have like a complete crisis of faith or a crisis of morality, then that is when you got to go and rehabilitate yourself. Because you don't want to be on the minbar and all of a sudden start spouting all types of weird stuff because now your whole foundation is shaken. So here's an interesting question
then. Isn't getting on the minbar too early something that can cause the crisis of faith?
100%. So what it comes down to this, and again, I feel very bad for you, but because unfortunately your reference point too often is me. So that's why I feel bad for you. I wish you had a better reference point. I'm gonna give you Mufti Kamani's phone number after this. So, but you know, you said something very key, and that's when you said that when you kind of had that thought and you had that process of like, all right, what if I can help with this khutbah situation? You came and you spoke to your imam about it.
Right.
See, that's the difference. Deciding to do it on your own versus going to somebody who might have a little bit more knowledge and a little bit more experience than you do, and it was kind of informally trained and kind of saying, I got this idea, what are your thoughts? Big difference between the two.
Yeah, so the shura process.
That's it. You have some consultation, you have some kind of guidance. You know, we're friends, so it's different. In this case, it's more like consultation. But sometimes if it's like, you know, a more senior teacher, it's almost like a level of mentorship, right? Like with my sheikh, it's like mentorship. But that makes all the difference in the world. That makes all the difference, or that there's somebody outside of you who kind of has a better handle on things, who's kind of telling you, all right, that makes sense, that doesn't make sense, that makes sense, that doesn't make sense. That makes all the difference in the world.
Alison, I think maybe one thing to tack on for people listening is it's not just the process of getting feedback on like, am I ready to go? But then it's the continued process of when I do get up and speak, I'm running my material by somebody.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I still do it with you now.
Yeah. I remember... because you, and I'm doing quotation marks for everybody at home, you worked from home.
Yeah. It's a thing. It's okay.
So you worked from home. So you were basically...
/ masjid sometimes.
So you were basically hanging out in my office at the masjid half the day. So we were just kind of hanging out and having a good time. We used to literally sit there and discuss all these different things and research stuff and look up stuff and write stuff. And it makes a huge difference, man. It makes a huge, huge difference. And I think that's also part of the logic that I think a lot of times when people kind of like, wait a second, y'all are just kind of like telling people to go out there and give khutbah. Like, no, nobody said that. We're telling people to educate themselves, get training, have a connection to knowledgeable people. There's a WhatsApp group. WhatsApp group that we're in.
We have one, yeah.
Yeah. There's like 30... Now, I shouldn't talk about it here because everyone's like, how can I get added to the WhatsApp group? You can't get added to the WhatsApp group. All right? I'm tired of being in WhatsApp groups. I need to leave all of them. But we have a WhatsApp group that's got, mashallah, you know, some knowledgeable teachers and experienced scholars and imams on there. And then it's got like a group of like 30, you know, brothers... like yourself, working professional, dad, husband, kind of middle-aged dudes who are active in their communities, giving khutbah and stuff, who are in this WhatsApp group with these experienced scholars. Not just only, they know them personally. It's just a place for us to kind of chat and talk. But there's always all types of discussions and ideas being bounced off of one another. It's fantastic. It's what the process was supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sure process for putting it together. And I think one thing, you know, when there's like a major event, whether like some kind of social or political event or something like that, it becomes a sounding board like, hey, is anyone talking about this? How do we address it?
Exactly.
And I think it leads to a more informed message being given from the member rather than someone that has no background in anything, just pontificating with their own thoughts on the microphone.
And that's where like doing the khatib workshop, you know, we were doing this process individually. Like you and I worked one-on-one, and then I worked with Brother Muhammad, and then we worked with a few people, and we kind of got this kind of individually working with people here and there. And then I remember like around, I think it was 2006 or 7, when I think you even kind of mentioned the little kind of mini movement we were able to do here in our area to some of your pals in other cities and stuff like that. They were kind of like, dude, that's a really cool concept. Y'all should really think about doing something a little more formal that some of us can come and attend as well. Yeah. So again, the khatib workshop was not meant to replace all that kind of consultation and shura and advice and guidance and mentorship and all that. It more so was to create kind of a launch pad that can launch someone into that whole arena and stratosphere.
And I think the other thing, one of the goals of the workshop also is giving people the right mentality for stepping into the arena. So not just the, you know, having the shura process, but also what are the actual responsibilities of doing it?
We've actually probably more than getting like people who have never given a khutbah before who show up to khatib workshop saying, I'd like to give khutbah, so let me attend your workshop. More than that, actually 80% of the people that attend the khatib workshop are people who have already been giving khutbah in the community who are like, I don't think I'm doing this the right way.
Yeah.
And they end up saying like, wow, you completely changed my mindset about how I'm going to approach this. I'm going to go back to my community. I'm going to get in touch with an imam or a sheikh in the community. And I'm going to work towards kind of figuring this out in a much more better, productive way.
Yeah
for sure.
And one thing that comes with that, so there's, you know, there's the idea of people just launching themselves into it or turning themselves into YouTube superstars or this and that. But I think there's the amana aspect. There's also the, you know, there's a lot of people who have been giving it regularly, but they didn't take it seriously. That's and I think right. that was one thing that we want to underscore is like, this is a craft that has to be taken very seriously. Like, I remember I talked to one imam and I tell the story every time in the workshop was, he goes, you know, I'm like, what's your preparation process? Mm-hmm. And he's someone, he is a scholar, legitimate, you know, yeah. good dude. But with this one thing, because he is the imam, he's got so much going on. He's like, well, I sit on the minbar and when the adhan is being called, I think of a topic and then I get up and talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I'm so good at what I do that people don't notice. And I was like, I think people notice and they probably just tune you out and you're not realizing it.
Yeah. Or they're polite, just too polite to say anything about it. And thirdly, I say this as just advice for, you know, my younger brothers who are students of knowledge or younger graduates, you know, of Islamic institutions, younger imams and khatibs. I say this to them as well, is that maybe the bar's been so low in your community that in and of itself, that kind of quote-unquote winging it, is already like a drastic improvement to the khutbah quality in your community, but you got to hold yourself to a higher standard.
Yeah.
You got to hold yourself to a higher standard. You can't resign yourself to that. I mean, that's not the Prophet. Ahsinu fi kulli shay. The Prophet ﷺ said, strive for excellence, beautify everything that you do. That's not good enough.
On the other side of it, the organizer side of it, I remember I had moved to Atlanta and I was going, and it was coincidentally a new masjid opened up the week that I opened there. And it happened to be like 2 miles from my workplace.
Yeah.
So I started going there every Friday. And I remember there was like a 3 or 4 week stretch where the same guy gave khutbah every week. And then literally a couple of days later, I see him getting out of the elevator at work. And okay. I'm like, you work here?
Interesting.
And he's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I thought you were the imam. And he's like, no, I work here. I'm a programmer. And I'm like, okay. And then, so I was just talking to him. I'm like, hey, you know, I just moved here from Dallas. I used to give khutbah there. I'm like, it looks like you need help. If you need help, let me know.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. And he's like, you got khutbah. And he's like, he scheduled me in for like 2 weeks later.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, okay.
Okay.
So I go and I give khutbah and then he puts me on the rotation. And then I asked him like sometime after that, after getting to know him better, I was like, look, you're the organizer. I was like, if I was the organizer and some kid comes up to me and volunteers himself, I would have asked for like a recording. I would have asked for videos. I want to just put him up. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I look at it differently. He goes, I have 52 khutbahs a year. He goes, if you came and screwed it up, I lose one out of 52 and I never call you back again.
Yeah.
He goes, but if you do well, then I got another resource that I can put on the rotation.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't fault him at all for that approach. I think that there is something, there's a very interesting idea there. But even if we do kind of add, you know, because somebody could bring up the objection, well, this is an act of worship, it's an obligation, it's people's Jumu'ah, you don't want to ruin it at the same time. I get all that part. So maybe we vet people a little bit better, but it still goes back to the same. I think there is an underlying thought and idea of the fact that we do need a lot more help and a lot more assistance to address all the needs of the community. And that's only going to happen if we have kind of a mindset of developing people, empowering people, cultivating people, trusting people. That's the only way we're going to address the needs of our community.
So let's talk about the next shift that happened with our workshop. So the first workshop that we did, it was like 08, 09, somewhere in there.
That was amazing.
And that was still my best favorite experience because we had people come from all over the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
First announcement, people showed up from everywhere.
And everybody who came was either already like a very active khatib in their community.
Yeah.
Or was kind of a semi-active khatib and went back and in the subsequent years became a very active contributor to their community.
Yeah. Yeah. But from day one, we had sisters wanting to take the workshop.
Yeah.
And this wasn't just the like, I want to give khutbah or something like that. But this was actually like sisters who are very active, very knowledgeable, contributing members of the community wanting to take it. And we were a little bit perplexed, like, why do you want to come take this?
Yeah. So again, it's called Khatib Workshop. It's training brothers on how to give khutbah. We follow mainstream, orthodox, proper, traditional Islamic fiqh. Women do not give khutbah in our understanding of fiqh. But these were active sisters who were like Sunday school teachers, or they taught women's halaqas, yeah, or they used to do Islam 101 presentations at the...
I mean, in short, they were actually actively teaching Islam from a microphone, much more than the brothers attending the workshop.
Yeah, they would lead the Islam 101 workshops, like give the tours to groups that would want to come visit the masjid. So they were very active in dawah. So they basically said, can we kind of sit just all the way in the back of the workshop, just a little table on the side by ourselves, just to kind of listen in? Because the parts that where you talk about the formality, the formal requirements of your khutbah, we'll just kind of take a break or something. But when you talk about like speaking skills and how to organize your thoughts and how to
constructing a presentation,
how to research ayat and a hadith and things like that, how to take a story from the seerah and present it to an audience and
in a relevant way,
all these kinds of things, that's very relevant to us because we're teaching classes. We're doing dawah, we're, you know, teaching halaqas and all this kind of stuff. And that really got us to thinking. And then what we basically did was, the next iteration of the workshop was, Friday was basically khatib training. And then Saturday and Sunday were public speaking training.
Yeah, so Friday was fiqh of Jummah and logistics of the Friday prayer.
Of the minbar, yeah.
And then Saturday was purpose of speaking, how to research, how to develop your message, how to research, how to utilize all the different sources, the public speaking skills, presentation, dealing with stage fright, all that stuff, yeah.
So that was Saturday, Sunday. So then we basically made it so that sisters would just attend Saturday, Sunday, and the brothers would come Friday through Sunday. Then the third iteration was, as we, you know, at the seminary and stuff like that, we were able to develop, you know, we had senior students of knowledge, female students of knowledge. Sisters would attend Friday through Sunday, but on Friday we would break out. Brothers would do like mimbar and jum'ah, specific related stuff with like you and me. And then the sisters would have their own sessions about addressing, you know, women's topics and certain issues pertaining specifically to women, their fiqh and things like that of, you know, leadership in the community and whatnot. And then eventually, the workshop even further kind of took on a whole nother form where we basically almost kind of created two separate things. There is a khatib workshop, but then there's a public speaking workshop.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of where we're at.
So I'll tell you one interesting thing that happened to me was I was teaching this in another city, like a one-day MSA version.
Yeah.
And so we had one brother in that city who's done some of the stuff and he knew the fiqh and whatnot. So we had a fiqh of Jummah session with him. And during the session, there was a sister that kept asking like a ton of fiqh of Jummah questions. Like just, you know, every little detail, she was just asking all kinds of questions. And I was kind of like, it was a little bit weird. I was like, what's going on here? And then I spoke to her during one of the breaks. And it turns out that she had traveled, I think like a 5-6 hour car ride by herself to come attend this khatib workshop because the seniors at their MSA were all graduating. The freshmen were coming in and really had no interest in coming and learning how to give khutbah. So she was attending so that she could go back and teach all the brothers how to do it properly.
Man. And I think some people are going to listen to this. And again, if you're just very, very blessed and you live in a community where you got scholars and imams and students of knowledge, you're going to be like, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. That just means that you've never been to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
I'll say this kind of thing is actually much more common than
you've never been to Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Forget Stillwater, man. In Dallas, if you're not at, there's been certain Fridays where I look around at some of the what's going on near me, and I'm like, where am I going to pray?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just because you're in a big city doesn't mean anything.
For sure. For sure. I mean, we know a brother who basically he drives from Dallas to Corsicana on Fridays to go give khutbah. I mean, some people listening are going to be like, course of what?
Yeah.
But Corsicana, Texas is like a small little town in central Texas that has like basically about 50 Muslims. And it's a city, it's some small city in central Texas. It's got 50 plus Muslims, which means Jummah, they have to pray Jummah. Yeah. So
they need someone to give khutbah.
So alhamdulillah, we're just again very blessed that because of the seminary and whatnot, we have students' knowledge where a brother basically drives down to go give them khutbah.
All right, let's shift gears for a second. So one very interesting thing that happened with this workshop over time is, you know, people would come sign up, they would want to take it. But there was another element of people that would be like, hey, can you guys please tell our imam to take it? Yeah. Or can you guys please reach out to this person to take it? Because that person had been giving khutbah for like 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and they were bad at it, but they'd been doing it so long, and the congregation always says, oh, we love you, Sheikh, and you're doing great, that they never saw any need to improve. What's the way that we, well, one, talk about just the importance of presentation skills, because once you reach a certain level of expertise, you think that you're good at it, or even a certain amount of experience. Like, if I've been speaking for 15 years, who are you to tell me that I'm bad at it? Like, obviously, people come listen to me, so I must be good. And why are presentation skills not as emphasized for people that are studying when that's one of the primary things that they'll be doing when they're
done studying? So I think the first, to kind of answer the first thing is that, well, I'm the imam of a community. People are there. People are coming. So, I mean, what says that I need to actually kind of like figure out how to do this better?
Like, why is this so important on my list when I got other problems to worry about too?
That I feel that's a separate question. Okay. If somebody just, a younger student of knowledge, just flat out, like a younger imam, just flat out, just kind of said, why do you think I need to kind of work on this? People already come in. I'm already imam. You know, I'm already doing the work, and people are here benefiting. So why are you emphasizing getting quote unquote better at this? I would just simply tell them that you obviously know nothing about business. Because that means you have no understanding of supply and demand. When you are in the market, when there is an extremely low supply and a very high demand, then, you know, like that, you know, in the land of the blind, a one-eyed is king. You know, so it's just, people eat garbage when there's no food. You know, so, and I'm not trying to call nobody garbage, but you know what I'm saying?
But you just did.
So it's just, I would just look, that's the advice that I needed when I was young. And that's the advice that I would give to my younger brothers. That's number one. Number two is, I got all these other things to worry about. You know, there's all these issues in the community. Why focus on this aesthetic kind of thing of just improving presentation skills? Because you still have not grasped the power of communication. So many of the issues that you are identifying in the community can be, are actually going to need effective communication. And not just from the pulpit, but even in the classes or even in the one-on-one conversations. Improving your communication skills is overall going to make you so much more effective of a leader and educator.
I think one thing, and this, I'm not trying to get too much of a tangent here, but there is sometimes this element of, I'm so good at this, but no one will listen to me. And they're going to listen to somebody else. Everyone's following that person, even though, quote unquote, I know more than them or I'm better than them. And what they fail to realize is that you can't communicate as well as them. And so people aren't listening to you.
Exactly. And then the third thing that, you know, that you had kind of mentioned as well was that, why does it seem like sometimes in the more traditional knowledge kind of scene, presentation skills were not as emphasized?
Yeah.
I think, first of all, it just depends. Okay. We did have some teachers that very much did emphasize it. There was one teacher that we had who was very motivated and very focused on that. And I remember he had started this little kind of like effort amongst the students. It was called Lajna li Tadrib al Bayan. It was kind of like kind of a little... a little bit of an organization or association, kind of a student-led effort to improve presentation skills. And he had actually made me in charge of that little kind of project, and he was the like faculty advisor, and we would have weekly these little kind of sessions that were more optional, after hours, where students would give like presentations, debates, and all that. And it was very, very beneficial. So I do think there, some teachers and scholars do focus on it. But I also think it's simply because in the traditional knowledge scene, a lot of the centers of learning, a lot of the Islamic universities, the madaris, madrasas, the Darul Ulooms, these kind of centers of classical traditional Islamic learning are seen more as academic institutions.
Right.
And not as much as like kind of training institutions, because even though it's not completely even true in the Muslim majority world anymore either, but still to some extent in the Muslim majority world, there is a difference between being a scholar, academic, researcher, and being kind of a community leader and speaker and presenter, which are also scholars, but it's almost like a completely different, path altogether.
Yeah.
So you do go through the traditional scholar training, and then you get like more specific training for the community part of it. But here we found out that because we had so many needs in the community that someone, I mean, even myself till today, I have the responsibility of running Qalam as overall an institution, teaching and kind of like running the teaching at and running the seminary. I'm still giving khutbah and teaching halaqas and classes though.
Yeah.
In the community, in the public. So we have to do a multitude of different things. And because there was this perception of if you went to, you know, Deoband or Karachi or Azhar or Medina or Mecca or Riyadh or wherever you went, if you went to these places, you were going to get like a complete Islamic education. And they never talked about like the actual presentation skills.
So that must not be an academic program.
It was an academic program. So then there's just this assumption of it must not be necessary. It's something that just naturally will just come to me. And I'm sorry.
Because I'm so going to know, I already know all this stuff.
Yeah, or it's just, I'm just going to wake up and it's just going to all magically come together. That's not how anything works.
Yeah.
That's not how your knowledge came to you. And this is a kind of training and a kind of knowledge.
So what would your advice be, let's say for the opposite though, where you've got a working professional that hasn't done formal studies.
Mm-hmm.
They've, you know, done some classes. They listen to some lectures here and there, but they see an opportunity that...
And they're, let's, if I can kind of chime in with that profile. Let's say they're very good at talking to people and very good at communication skills.
Yep.
And there is a need in the community, but their kind of formal knowledge part of it is still in its infancy.
Yep.
It's still in the very beginning. For folks like that, I would very seriously advise that, look, at the end of the day, I know I have so much respect for those people because they work full-time jobs, like real jobs.
Not
like,
work from home. Yeah. I go to an office now most of the time.
Most of the time.
A few days a week.
But yeah, they don't have imam jobs. They don't have work from home jobs, man. It's a grind. You know, they drive an hour and a half each way commuting to and from work. Yeah, I know. But a lot of these people do, right? They got crazy commutes. They're at work. They got to deal with all kinds of stuff. And then, you know, they got like kids at home and all this stuff going on at home. And I have a lot of respect for those people. Mashallah. They're warriors. They do a lot. And they still are motivated to help out the community. I appreciate them a lot. So I don't mean to put more work on them, but I do feel forced to say you have found something very precious and very valuable. You are motivated to help the community. You are going to have to work a little bit harder, carve out a little bit of extra time, and have some kind of consistent means of learning your deen. Consistency is key there.
Yeah.
Consistent means of learning your deen, because that is going to benefit you and benefit all the people that you are serving in the community.
And can I add one clarification?
Yeah.
That's a trap for us, is learning for the sake of learning, not learning for the sake of giving a khutbah.
Yeah, and that's why,
a huge difference.
And that's why that little consistent class or halaqa or reading that you're basically doing with a teacher or an imam or a scholar, that will sometimes not even directly be you know, providing content to your khutbas.
No, but it's important, yeah.
Yeah, but you just got to do that because you're nourishing your soul, you're nourishing your mind, you're nourishing your heart, you're increasing the depth of your understanding of the religion, and that will create an added extra benefit in the message you deliver. Yeah. But you're not literally just only reading for the purposes of aggregating content. I'll use an internet word for you. Yeah. Aggregating. All right. That's an internet word, right?
That's the sports word right now. That's the social media content machine.
There we go. So you're not just aggregating content, but you're actually just trying to benefit yourself, right?
So what would you say for imams maybe, or people that, forget imams, just anyone that's been giving talks for a few years now?
Yeah.
How do they gauge, like, how can I tell, am I actually an effective speaker?
Yeah.
Or am I just falling victim to the confirmation bias of, like, the three people who come up and say, great job, great job, great job, no matter how terrible it was?
Am I the creature of high demand, low supply?
Am I the guy on American Idol that thinks I'm amazing, but I actually am horrible without realizing it?
Right. I have another comp for that, another comparison for that. Am I just a Thursday night basketball superstar? or am I actually good? So a little inside joke from my guys. There are two things that I can advise for that. Number one, if you can actually get someone to give a listen to the khutbah in real time, real life, or even a recording, that's
can we pause here for a second?
Yeah,
because this is really hard.
Very hard.
So I've been on both sides of this.
Yeah.
So I've had one imam who's a buddy of ours,
yeah,
come up to me and say, Omar, I really want you to critique my khutbah. And I'm like,
sure.
I was like I said okay, but I'm thinking in my head like, yeah, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
And for a couple of weeks, like, he kept asking me and asking me and asking me, and I was like, okay, fine,
mm-hmm.
I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because and you know this with some of the Qalam students, when I give someone a khutbah critique, I'm
pretty direct.
I'm thorough and direct.
Yeah.
But only because I know how hard it is to get that feedback.
Yeah, that's what they're asking for.
And so with this particular imam, I was like, okay. So I gave him some feedback, and I was actually kind of surprised. He actually took the feedback and incorporated it.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And he started making like changes to his talk. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I was a little bit more free with like giving him feedback, like as I saw fit. And again, this is not me being amazing, giving feedback. The credit is that he sought it out and then actually made an effort to implement change, which is like 1% of people actually do it.
That's huge.
Because most of the time people come and ask, and I'll just be like, no. Okay, whatever, you know, I just want to listen, this and that. But he actually took feedback and incorporated it.
Okay.
And then on the flip side, and this happened to me recently, and I don't mind mentioning his name because we should give him a shout out, but I was giving khutbah at Kapel and Sheikh Abdullah Oduro was there,
mm-hmm.
Who's a very good speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sitting with him in the office beforehand, and I told him like, you know, Sheikh, if you don't mind, can you give me some feedback on the khutbah after? And he was just like, okay, yeah. And I was like, no, I've done the okay out of people. I was like, no, I'm being serious. I'm like, it's very difficult for me to get solid feedback. Because he was hanging out because he had to give the second one. So uh-huh. He was just like sitting there.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, you're already here. I'm like, no, I actually need detailed feedback on what I can do to make it better.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. So after I gave the khutbah, I sat with him. And then he actually did sit with me and be like, okay, well, here's like three or four things I noticed while you were talking that you could have done differently. Here's something that you should have researched and maybe added in. It would have made your conclusion much stronger, et cetera, et cetera. And I was blown away because none of those were things that I had thought about.
Nice.
And they were literally all things where I was like, oh, if I had actually done all those things, this would have actually been a pretty good speech.
That's right. So, yeah. So that's where like the ideal thing is. You can get someone to, in real time, listen or even listen to a recording and give feedback. But I was just going to say, as you perfectly highlighted, you know, that's very, very hard to come by because of just availability, accessibility, and then even just kind of...
Well, also qualified feedback.
Qualified feedback.
Like the person has to know what they're talking about when they...
That's another thing. And then even if you do find somebody qualified, then there's a whole lot of other dynamics at play as well. What the nature
personal
of the
relationship.
That's, you know, so it's very, very complex. However, the second backup suggestion that I was going to give, that is, again, not going to be as beneficial and constructive as the first option, but it's an option B for a reason. It's a backup for a reason. Option B would be to attend the khutbah of someone or a presentation by someone who you do actually hold in high esteem and high regard, like you feel like they are a very effective communicator, kind of attending theirs and just making observations of how they're communicating their points. That to some degree will give you certain thoughts and ideas about, okay, wow, that's how he does that. That's how he does that. That's how he does that. Which is, again, not as great as getting feedback directly on your method, but at least you can make good observations about other people's good methods.
What are things that they're doing that I can incorporate? Just picking up some...
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of like watching a master work, kind of the apprenticeship idea.
And it doesn't have to be Islamic speeches either.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, we used to, in the Khatib workshop, we would talk about it all the time, whether we, you know, were highlighting different, you know, presentations or public speeches by different individuals who very successfully kind
of... We actually had a movie montage one year of, like...
We did.
Great speeches from movies, but some mushes didn't like that being shown, so I think we stopped doing it.
We gotta find where that montage is, and we'll upload it to YouTube and share the link with people.
I think Abdullah probably has it
somewhere. He probably does have it somewhere, buried somewhere in his hard drives, but we should find that. That would be a good upload. Alrighty. Cool.
Anything else you want to share about the workshop before we
That's just it. I just think that I think that there's 3-4 different kinds of folks that are going to listen to this. Some people, when they see a khatib workshop, they're like, thank God, thank heavens, finally, I hope this improves the quality of my life. That more khatibs actually make sense on Friday on the minbar. There's going to be another group of people that are going to kind of see that and be like, huh, that seems like I could benefit from that if I want to be active in my community. To the first group, I think, you know, I hope we can live up to your expectations. To that second group that kind of sees this and be like, oh, that's interesting, I could probably benefit my community. That second group, I really, really do hope they attend the workshop, because they're probably going to walk away with a very different understanding of what they walked in with. Not that they're not going to be interested in helping the community, but they're going to walk away with they're going to walk away motivated to help the community, but with also a profound sense of the responsibility of helping the community, that it is something you have to take very seriously. It's not like picking up a hobby, this is not a hobby. This is a mission. This is a purpose.
Oh, it's stressful.
Oh yeah. A third group, I think, is going to look at this and be a little bit skeptical, like, what are you going to teach me in a weekend? I also hope those folks attend. Yeah. Because what I'm going to tell you is that I don't think we're going to teach you anything in a weekend. I think we're going to open your eyes in the weekend about subtleties, nuances, little things. You know,
And tools that you can throw in a box and you're going to go back and refer to later.
It's a toolbox.
Like, oh, now I know how to use it.
It's a toolbox. Yeah. Exactly what it is. That's such a perfect description. It's a toolbox. And the other thing is also, there's an expression in English that is kind of tricky. But I've always liked this expression, the devil is in the details.
Yeah.
Right? The details are so much more important so than people give them credit for. So I think that person is going to walk away with their eyes opened about, like, wow, I can, like, literally they pointed out 3 tweaks and it totally changed the way I communicate with people.
Oh, I'll share one thing that happened is we had a student come, we did a practice speech writing session, and we were having people go through intro, 3 points, conclusion.
Yeah.
And we have a tweak on that framework that we teach, but the feedback that we got after was, this guy said, you know, when you were going through that, we started off like intro, 3 points, conclusion. I've been doing that since the 3rd grade, big whoop.
Yeah.
But then we had to sit down and actually, like, force ourselves to go through. It's like, I thought about what I'm presenting in a way that I'd never thought about before.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think for that group of people, I think they'll be very pleasantly surprised about how much you can be made aware of even in the weekend. And then the fourth group of people that are going to like see this workshop or listen to this, they're going to be like, they might be hyper traditionalists where they're going to be like, wait a second. You're actually encouraging a bunch of randos to go out there and give khutbah. I especially would love for those folks to come and just kind of give a listen to the workshop. Not attend.
Even if we are, it's not changing what's already happening. So,
yeah, you're trying to tell me that the random crazy uncle who's been giving khutbah at your masjid for 25 years is not a rando? Just because he's on the board of your masjid or he's your boss, right? I'm sorry to say it like that, but he's not a rando. He's just as rando comes, right? That's about as random as it gets. No, but I hope those folks, I'm not asking them to attend. I'm asking them to come in and give a listen because I think they'll also be pleasantly surprised about the fact that we're not telling random people to just get out of bed and crawl onto a minbar and just give like a random khutbah. We are teaching people how to implement and succeed following a methodology.
And I think we're raising the bar of the responsibility of it much more than...
Like we just talked about. Yeah. We talk about mentorship. We talk about seeking knowledge. We talk about learning and growing and increasing yourself. We emphasize all those things. Our objective is not... You know, if I can say something. The objective of khatib workshop is not to improve khutbas. The objective of khatib workshop is to improve khatibs.
Yeah, well.
That's it. In a nutshell, that's what I would say. We're trying to make better khatibs. And the khutbas will fix themselves. That's it.
That's it. Sounds like a good spot to leave off.
Inshallah. And hopefully we can continue this conversation some other time, inshallah.
Definitely, inshallah. All right. We'll check out the show notes. We'll link up relevant articles and all that. Especially if you want to request the workshop in your community, you can check it out there. And then we'll catch you in the next episode.
Assalamu alaikum.
Thanks, Sam.